Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. You know what we can always depend on? The wonderful glowing light. Oh, sorry. The wonderful glowing light of video games. I just wanted to throw that out there. Video games are great, and kind of the main reason we do this show. I mean, it's probably the main reason. It's not kind of.
It is the main reason.
To do this show, called The Gamers Inn. It's not like we're here to... We could play board games, right?
I guess, technically.
Yeah.
If we really wanted to. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about video games, and we've got a lot to talk about this week, so we're going to jump right into it. Ryan, you have played some Fire Emblem Echoes, so you're such a huge Fire Emblem fan. How does this one stack up?
Okay, so Fire Emblem Echoes, Shadows? It could be Shadows of Valentia. It's a very long title. It's brand new. It came out on Friday. This is unheard of. Like, I've put about 12 hours in.
Is this the one that's available on the Switch?
No. Okay. The Switch Fire Emblem titles, there's a Warriors game coming out in the fall, and then there's a proper Fire Emblem game coming out sometime in 2018. But this one is a mainline series one where it's on the 3DS. However, it's a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, which is a game that came out in 92, exclusive to the Japan market on the NES.
Right. Okay, I remember this one now.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I don't know, it was announced earlier this year, and that kind of shocked me in that this is, you know, a Fire Emblem game. I don't know if you recall, like, 1 year ago we talked about Fates, which was the game they split off into, like, three different downloads.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about, you know, the interesting part of having two sides of a story with different conclusions but similar characters, but the model of purchasing each side was kind of like, you know, at the time I thought, oh, it's great, more Fire Emblem, but now that I've kind of played through it, it's like, no, it is kind of a playthrough once, buy a second path. It was probably a little bit too expensive at the time.
Right, because you had to pay basically like the full price of the game each time, right? Or was it like 40 and then like 30 and 30 or something? But it was like, it wasn't a big discount, I remember, to get the next one.
It wasn't enough to kind of, so basically what happened was Fire Emblem 3DS games in Canada are $50. And I purchased Birthright when it launched. And then more recently when Fire Emblem Heroes came out, and I've been playing a lot of that on iPhone, I thought, oh, I really want to play more Fire Emblem, and I didn't want to wait for Echoes, so I picked up Conquest, because a lot of people were talking about how Conquest had a lot of like the old school Fire Emblem objectives, similar to Awakening, which I loved. I put like 120 hours into it, and I picked it up, and it was $30, which is it's like $20-$25 off when you factor in taxes and stuff. So it's not like the same price. But it's on that bubble where you feel like, this is a little pricey, you know, where, especially when the game's been out a year and it's DLC and Nintendo never discounts their DLC. So
yeah,
it was rather unfortunate. And, you know, in hindsight, looking back, it felt like I was paying for an addition a little bit too much because, you know, I was playing through the first, now I didn't get all the way through Conquest, but I played maybe the first 5 or 6 missions, and they felt very close to Birthright. And I feel like if they come to the same conclusion on killing the bad guy, because the bad guy's the same, I felt like you weren't going to get very different maps, different interactions. Like, you were still, I think the mission was that kind of broke the glass for me was you were still going to the Ice Tribe to negotiate their surrender, no matter what side you were on. Except, I guess, if you were on the Birthright side, you were not negotiating their surrender, but negotiating them being an ally, but still having to fight them in the same mechanic that you did on both sides. So that felt kind of cheapened. Like, I'm just paying for more character interactions as opposed to maps,
actual gameplay and stuff.
Exactly. So the reason I'm bringing this up, because Shadows of Valentia has two characters that you can swap between, Om and Celica, which are these, like, I don't know, they kind of build them, it's very Japanese, it's super Japanese, they kind of build them as brother and sister, but like they're a little bit more than that. They're not brother and sister, so it's not like
so it doesn't get weird.
I don't know. It's just they're like really young, and like they kind of try to build up this like emotional relationship between the two. At the very beginning of the game in the prologue, it's like they're running through a field of flowers, and it's like, oh, that's supposed to like they're more than friends. They're like besties. They're like soulmates. And then, like, you know, an hour later, something happens and they have to separate the two. And that's the prologue. Very sad. And then after the prologue, it jumps back, I think, like 10 years later. And you're back at it with the main character, Om, and exploring his sort of character side, going through the motions of, oh, we have to go free the kingdom from the bad guys. So they go do that. And then it starts off this whole, like, story between the two. And the story is really good. It definitely feels like it's a remake of a 92 game. Like the story is very basic. There's two warring countries that share a border, and the top one that is dominated by war, and the bottom one, which is dominated by peace, they don't get along so well. And the top one like has a guy who overthrows the bottom one from within, and there has to be this like. What do they call it? It's a really poor name. They call their team of knights that are trying to free the kingdom of the bad guys up north called the Deliverance. Just feels like you maybe probably should have gone with your second choice. I don't know. You know, like, we're the Deliverance. Like, man, do you, like, there's a movie that you probably just don't want to invoke at all.
Yeah.
You know, and
one of those, I think it kind of sounds almost like one of those lost in translation moments.
I think so. And that's the unfortunate part, is that it's really the only portion of the game that is lost in translation, because all the other translation is superb. It's really well done. The whole thing is voice acted. So in comparison to older Fire Emblem games, where the only thing that was voice acted were like the hmm and ha and you did it, you know, just like the little phrases that they play mm-hmm. over and over again. This one's fully voice acted, and I was a little worried that, well, looking at Zelda, like, the first attempt at a series being, you know, having full voice acting, it's hit and miss. And this one's actually, it's really good. It's really well done. A lot of the characters are, none of the characters are bad, like the main ones. Some of them are a little less interesting than others in terms of the voice acting, but some of them are amazing, like, really well done. For a Fire Emblem game. Like, we're not talking, like, this isn't, like, Nolan North Game Award type, you know, performances.
Speaking of, Matt just told me that apparently they cast the guy who's playing Spider-Man, that little freaking kid,
right,
as Nathan Drake.
Yep.
What?
Well, see, the thing is, there's a...
Derail this conversation, but...
It's good. I think that I had completely forgot. There's been a lot... So we should have probably addressed the fact we didn't have an episode last week because mm-hmm. either of us had no chance to play something new, and there was really nothing in the news. And as you're probably going to see when we get into the news, a lot of shit happened between Thursday, the day after we were supposed to record, and today, including the fact that Tom Holland will be playing a young Nathan Drake, which makes sense if you played Uncharted 3 or Uncharted 4. There's some like early... like preteen stuff that
but he's like he's not young enough to play little dude in an orphanage, but he's not old enough to play like later Drake, so no. I don't know.
And it's kind of like, and I don't know what they're trying to get away from. Like, are they trying to get away from killing hundreds of people on screen, or are they trying to get away from, you know, trying to cast a character to look like Nathan Drake? Like, I can kind of see the allure of not having to match every fan's expectation of what Nathan Drake should be. So I kind of see both sides of it. And honestly, I find when people are trying to make...
He's a tall, traditionally handsome white guy. How hard can that be to cast in Hollywood right now? Like, honestly.
I don't know. If they do, like, an old Nathan Drake, they should, like, just get Tony Stark to do it and then complete the cycle. Like,
that's probably what they're going to do, is they're just going to take, like, Robert Downey Jr. and what's-his-face from Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and they're like, wow, these guys have great chemistry. Let's just make an Uncharted movie with these two in it, because they'll be young and old, and they'll be fine, it'll be great, haha.
So is the in-between Ryan Reynolds, is, like, that who you throw in between, Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Holland? Either Ryan Reynolds, or if you want to, like... You know, I don't know, like Nathan Fillion. I love Nathan Fillion, so what I'm about to say, don't take this the wrong way, but I feel like Nathan Fillion is a little cheaper than Ryan Reynolds.
He's too old now, though, dude.
Okay, well, get this.
Nathan Fillion in Firefly era would have been better.
I don't know if we have time travel at our disposal, but maybe maybe if you couldn't afford Robert Downey Jr. for another... major franchise, you could swap in Nathan Fillion.
Anyways, I totally derailed the conversation, but I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that travesty.
I'm aware, and I'm actually not upset, because honestly, they weren't making the movie before that, so this is the first big step, and if it takes Tom Holland Spider-Man to make it happen, so be it.
I guess. I'm just so worried. Anyways, doesn't matter. Sorry. Back to Fire Emblem.
So Fire Emblem fully voice acted. It's fine. It's not gonna send you screaming, running away. It's actually kind of well done. I find that Celica's brand of folks are better voice acted. They're more interesting. Om's characters are all just a bunch of knights and his friends who all kind of sound the same. But Celica is this priestess who has her friends, but also kind of like a thrown together ragtag crew who are trying to solve the conflict through peaceful battles, as opposed to just fighting folks. So Om is...
How do you peacefully battle?
You just kill a bunch of pirates. You know? Just
so you peacefully battle by killing people. Got it.
Well, it's like, okay, so basically Om and his in the Deliverance are on their way to fight the Regellian army. Big stupid words being thrown at me. The reason I'm able to pronounce them properly is because of the voice acting. I don't know how many times I've heard someone say the Regellian army. So they're off trying to fight the good fight by just killing the Regellian army. And Celica, who once you take control of her in Act 3, you can kind of swap in between the two. And Celica is trying to go to the Temple of Mila. There's these gods, the good god and the bad god, and I guess they disappeared, and that's why they don't get rain anymore. It's very Japanese. And like I said, it's a very basic story. You can tell that it's kind of rooted in its 92, when it was made in 92. So, yeah. But other than the story, the remake around it is very faithful to the original, in that it was very different from other Fire Emblem games. So instead of a linear progression from story chapter to story, like you fight your battle, you get some story, you fight your battle, you're presented with this overhead map that you can then, you know, navigate with your character. And then once you unlock,
choose your path.
Exactly. And once you unlock both of them, you can actually swap between the two and do, like, say you want, I want to progress Celica's story a little bit. I'm going to go do a couple battles with her and progress her map. And then I'm going to go and fight with Om, and you can swap back and forth whenever you want, and you basically move your pieces, kind of like Super Mario World type thing, or Mario World, or Super Mario Brothers 3, mm-hmm. where you're moving across the map. It's really neat, and that's new. That was not in there. And the other thing that's new is these, like, you go into the village and you can, like, talk to NPCs. You can find items in the area by playing this, like, pixel hunt game. It's kind of annoying. But there's also dungeon crawling. So you go into these areas where you can explore dungeons. And in the dungeons, there are fully polygonal enemies walking around. And you can avoid them. You can run away. Or you can also, like, head right into them and fight them. So it's kind of like Pokemon, except you can see the enemies.
Oh, you can see where the encounters are. That's nice.
Exactly, yeah. I really
disliked that kind of mechanic in Pokemon, how it was like, just run through the grass in circles for a while until something pops out at you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't have that here. You can see the enemies, and the dungeons serve a purpose. Like, for example, the first dungeon you come across is this is the Deliverance's hideout, or maybe it's the second dungeon. It's the Deliverance's hideout, but they use the fact that it's a dungeon infested with these zombies, they call them terrors, as protection. So their hideout is in the back of this, you know, decrepit crypt that's overrun with zombies, and you have to fight through the zombies to get to the hideout. It's kind of a neat concept, and they throw those at you every couple battles so you can explore. That's really cool. They've kind of taken, so this was my issue in that we've played a new Fire Emblem game, especially last year when they released like three of them. We've played a lot of Fire Emblem, and I was worried that this one was going to be another one of those. And they've changed so much to the point that it's a very different game, except for the fact that there's the grid-based combat that's still there. But they don't have relationships anymore. You can't, like, you can still, like, have support conversations, but you can't marry. Sorry, Val. She was very bummed when I told her that when I hinted that there probably aren't relationships in the game. It's more just story-based. It's still interesting, but there's no, like, reward outside of, battle partnering, where you can get boosted stats when you have characters that support each other close by. There's no weapon triangle, so like sword doesn't beat axe doesn't beat lance. It's all kind of evened out, which kind of makes sense. Like if I have a sword and you have an axe and we come at each other like swinging, it's not rock paper scissors. Like I'm pretty sure.
Say, yeah, the Fire Emblem. So I played the mobile one.
Yep.
And it had like the red, blue, green triangle, which kind of sort of made sense because it was almost like different kinds of magic counteract other different kinds of magic, or at least that's what I understood from it. And that makes more sense than just if you're all running around with, like you said, like lances, swords, and axes. They're all pretty even. So, yeah. But at the same time, it added an extra level of strategy because I couldn't just throw two characters against each other. I had to try to line up my different colors against their different colors in a way that was favorable for my team. So did you lose that level of strategy, or did they kind of like replace it with something else Echoes?
That's a great question, because they actually have kind of taken that big series staple away and replaced it with a bunch of little additions that kind of make up for its absence in terms of strategy. So, you know, archers still do extra damage to Pegasus riders because, I don't know, arrows to people flying always made sense to me. You know, they kept that in. But the advantage isn't quite as devastating as I remember. It still does extra damage, but not a whole lot. Magic users, and this kind of makes sense. magic users, it's real, folks. Basically, what happens is there's no mana, but you use your health to use spells. And including healing spells. So whenever you're healing someone, you're taking a chunk of your health. Not one for one.
Giving it to them, kind of?
Yeah, it's not one for one, but it's still like a cost for reward type model. And then
sounds very like warlocky.
Exactly. Yeah, it's actually really neat, and you get used to it, and you can start I equipped a blessed ring or something to one of my healers. So every time she heals and she loses health, the next turn she actually instantly regains that health. So there's a bit of strategy there, and there's still stuff you have to remember. There's still units that are still very susceptible to magic, so you have to keep them away from some of the mages. But there's less what I find is there's less sort of, I'm going to throw this guy into the fray first because he's going to beat everybody else on this map because he's the tank. There's less of that. There's more strategy in, okay, I have to make sure that I know which guys are coming at me here so I can put some of my strongest units forward to draw them out. But then I have to have my mages and my archers there to kind of take care of them. So it feels like you're being more strategic. And the best addition to this game is the fact that there is a rewind function. So when you do something stupid, like me, every time I play this game, like I shouldn't have left my damn archer exposed and he dies and I have to reset the 3DS and do the whole map over again, you can just hit this button that says, like, you have six times. Yeah, you can rewind it as far back as you want. Like if you made a mistake like two turns ago, you can just rewind all the way back to that turn and be like, nah, I shouldn't have sent that dude in to do a bunch of cool stuff. I should hold him back because there's going to stuff happen that will take him out. And that's the whole point of Fire Emblem, is you don't want your characters to die, because they're mm-hmm. characters. When they die, they're gone forever. And you don't get that story. You don't get the character interaction. So the rewind function is possibly the best addition to the Fire Emblem franchise. And
Is that something that's brand new, or is that like a relic of the 1992 version?
I don't know if it was in the 92 version, but it is brand new in the games I play. I've played since the Game Boy Advance when it first came over to North America, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's new. I mean, we might have someone write in saying it was in the 92 version, but I don't remember people talking about it as if it was sort of brought back. But
it could be a new feature. They do that all the time when they do kind of new remastered versions of games.
Yeah.
Or they used to, anyways.
Exactly. And I actually find myself, you know, I'm about halfway through the game. About 12 hours in, I think I'm halfway through. I might not be. I might actually just be scratching the surface. But I just lost as in had to reset my 3DS. I just lost my first match, and I'm playing on hard classic mode. And you know, Josh says the rewind sounds a bit OP. There are limited uses. So you start off with only being able to use it 3 times, and then 4, 5, 6. So I have a feeling once I get farther in the game. And I have actually just now, yesterday when I was playing, exhausted those turns and had to reset the game so I wouldn't lose a character. Sometimes you do find yourself in a situation that you cannot fix, and you have to back out and start the map over again. So it's the best addition so far to this franchise. It's like racing games that added a rewind function. You know, you just take that corner a little too wrong and go into the wall, and it's like, you know I can do better, and you just rewind, as opposed to having to do it all over again. It's just so nice. I know it's not realistic, but in a game where you have flying unicorns and you know, magic users and dragons, I'm pretty sure, Jocelyn, that we can entertain
time travel.
Thank you, especially in a series where one game was all about time travel and kids that grow up way too soon. As soon as you get married, poof, you got a kid. Doesn't make sense. Well, makes sense in the lore, but it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know. But that's Fire Emblem. Fair enough. Check it out. It's good.
And that was a 3DS title, right? I feel like there was one more thing that I was going to ask, but then I got distracted by, poof, there's kids.
Well, the archers are interesting because they can shoot from afar, and they can counter at one space, which is new. But anyways, which is pretty realistic. Like, if I went up and hit you and you had a bow, you probably have enough space to notch an arrow and take you out. So, anyways, what was
I know
your question?
What I was going to say. What I was going to say was, so you got 12 hours into Fire Emblem Echoes. So,
yeah.
Because I know you were saying that you were going to play some more Prey.
Yeah.
Which is really hard to say. But so did you get any time in Prey, or were you just totally absorbed in Fire Emblem Echoes?
I didn't get into Prey. I got Echoes on Friday, and I sat on this couch here with my 3DS, just with the Switch and all the consoles and my PC in the background. I'm like, nope, I'm just gonna put my headphones on and listen to this really well translated game talk to me about the Knights of Regalia and dragons and Mila and Duma. That's a bunch of words.
That's awesome, because I know you were really excited about Prey after our last episode. So, I mean, the fact that Fire Emblem was able to pull you away from that, I think, is kind of a really good review.
Yeah, well,
really good. Like, if you have a 3DS, go check it out.
And it's different. Like, if you've played the Fire Emblem games before, like me, since they've come out here, and you want to play more Fire Emblem, but you want something different, I think this gives you the fire. It'll scratch your Fire Emblem itch, but it will give you something different. Like, you don't. If you want the same, you can go out and buy one of the many versions of Fates. If you want something new, a little different, something that they probably won't do again. Like, I could see them bringing the rewind function to new games, but I don't see them bringing a lot of these major changes forward. I think the new game on Switch next year will have the weapon triangle back, and it'll have the normal, you know, weapon degradation type stuff. There's no weapon degradation in this. You just equipped a sword and it never breaks. So there's just a lot of differences, and I don't feel...
Yeah, they seem to like breaking swords, so I feel like they'll probably bring that into everything on Switch.
Exactly. But yeah, it's different
inventory
enough.
Management. That's good. Speaking of different enough, actually, so... You guys may remember about, I don't even know, it might have been like literally over 100 episodes ago. I can't even remember exactly which episode it was when I first got into ESO. But ESO is coming out with a new expansion at the beginning of June called Morrowind. And if you pre-purchase it, you actually have early access to it now. So the Morrowind patch is actually live in the game. So everyone is affected by it. It's just whether or not you have access to the content is based on whether you pre-ordered the expansion or not. So I got the email because I, like Ryan, was planning on going in and playing some more Prey. But I got an email from Bethesda who was like, hey, guess what? Early access. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. So I'm going to give ESO a try. And man, I really enjoy it. Like, I really, really do. And I haven't even gotten, because I played it for like maybe a week, like not even. And I think my character was literally level 10 when I started playing today, and I haven't experienced most of the ESO content, so I didn't get a chance to get into the new patch stuff, because obviously it's like max level kind of stuff. But Morrowind is the first game that I played in the Elder Scrolls series, so I'm really excited to go back to that location. So I'm looking forward to playing more ESO. I played probably like 4 hours today or so. And it still has, like, I wish it was just a standalone single player Elder Scrolls. Like, it doesn't need to be multiplayer. But I found that, at least, and I feel like I must have had a similar experience when I started playing WoW, but I find the interface and the keybinds in ESO is not intuitive at all. And now they actually have add-ons, because when I was first playing, they didn't allow add-ons. So they allow add-ons, so I feel like maybe there's like some interface changing add-ons I should maybe look into, and everything else. But I wanted just like the plain ESO experience, and it took me so long to do so many things that should be really easy because it was not intuitive at all. Like, I had to actually watch, because I had like 7,000 crowns on my account, which is like the premium currency. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, from months that I had been subbed and, like, welcome back promos and stuff over the years, they've just accumulated because I've never spent anything before. So, excuse me. I went to the, like, anywhere that you click on the link to the Crown Store, it takes you to the Elder Scrolls website. And then on the website, it shows you everything available in the Crown Store, and you can click on it, and it gives you, like, an overview, I guess, like a description of whatever the product is, but you can't actually buy it. And I was like, okay. I Googled it. I went to the Elder Scrolls support, and it just keeps referencing buying things in the Crown Store. And I'm like, I'm trying, but I can't. And it turns out the Crown Store is actually in game. And you have to, it's like the very last icon on, because when you go into, you've got like your main game menu when you hit the escape button, but there's also like your in-game UI menu, and it's all these little icons across the top of your screen, and there's probably like 10 or 12 of them, and the one on the very far left is the Crown Store. But it took me a good probably 45 minutes. Like, I looked it up all over the place. Eventually, finally, I found a YouTube video from a guy who was like, all right, I'm going to tell you everything about the Crown Store. And I watched like the first 30 seconds, and he's like, to access the Crown Store, you have to go to your in-game menu. It's this icon. I was like, thank you. Like, why was this so hard to find? Because when you log into your account on like the internet, it shows you your account balance. It shows you everything in the store. Nowhere does it say, like, purchase these in-game or anything else. I literally thought there was going to be, like, a vendor I had to go to in a capital city or something. That's why I looked it up. And it took me so long to figure out. And then the thing that I wanted to buy with all my crowns was basically all the DLC. Because one thing that I found playing through Skyrim is it's such a big game. There's so much to do that when they actually put DLC out, the Vampire DLC was pretty good because it just kind of added an extra story kind of off to the side. But any of the DLC, and we had the same experience in Mass Effect, where like any of the DLC that impacts your kind of leveling game, is, like, you don't really want to go all the way back and start a new character over at the beginning just to experience a DLC. So I wanted just all the DLC in my game going forward, just in case, just so I could kind of run into it naturally. So that's what I wanted to buy. Was there was, I think it was like 5,500 crowns or something for 4 packs of DLC, basically everything that they put out prior to Morrowind. So I finally get into the crown store in my game, and I go to purchase it, and then it's like, if you have a whatever it is, Elder Scrolls Online premium membership or whatever, which I do, then they're like, you automatically have access to all the DLC. It's one of your perks. I was like, oh, damn it.
So this is the thing. This is why World of Warcraft is heralded as the best MMO out there ever around ever launched. Like, it does everything so well. And I have my issues with World of Warcraft, but I know that that game has created a UI that does not punish its users. Now, that being said, and even that being said, there is an in-game store that works very well and is not obtrusive at all in WoW. And then you look at these games that go free to play, and it's all of a sudden the first person they fire is their UI designer. You know, they go around, it's like, well, we're going free to play. If we don't have a subscription, we can't afford one of you. Let's fire the encounter guy. Let's fire the guy who does the UI, but let's keep the guy who designs the cool bunny outfits, because we're going to need to sell a lot of those. Guild Wars 2 did this as well. Now, they always launched as a pay-to-play game as opposed to, or a pay once with no subscription. Mm-hmm. And it has the gem store, whatever the hell they call it.
Yeah, the real money store, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And the issue with those is that they're just filled with garbage. Filled with garbage. Just mm-hmm. content that you don't need, content that you might want, but is like hidden behind a wall. And ESO has sort of adopted this platform where they still have the subscription, but you can play for free after you buy the main game. If you have the subscription, some stuff is built in, like you said, mm-hmm. the DLC packs, some of it isn't.
Which is great. So if you're paying a subscription like World of Warcraft, all of their patch stuff is built in like World of Warcraft. So that, it makes sense to me now that I think about it. But when you're looking at the Crown Store and it doesn't say anywhere on the website, you know, like, hey, this is included with your ESO membership, and maybe I should have read more into it. I was basically just like, yeah, I'll sub because I'm playing the game, so give me the perks. Yeah, and I didn't really read into what the perks are. Well, but I was like, I don't want to, like, I know I'm going to enjoy it. I enjoyed it when I played it the first time, even though I only played it for the first month. Like, I enjoyed it. I was just too busy with other things when ESO originally launched. So I was just looking to make sure that I had access to everything, and it took me a very, very, very long time to figure out exactly where and how to buy the things that I knew I had the currency for. I'm standing there with, like, holding handfuls of crowns going, let me give these to you, thank you. And but you're right, like, they have definitely gone down the not collectible path, the cosmetic path, for sure, with the items that they have available. Like, they have player housing, and so they have all kinds of stuff that you can put in your house. Like, you can literally buy living room sets, Ryan. Living room sets.
Oh, they have the guild housing, don't they? In that
yeah.
game.
So they have they have player housing. They have mounts. They have non-combat companion pets. They have outfits, so you can buy like a set of armor for your dude. That's just totally like, you basically wear the armor that you're wearing and then give it the appearance of, it's like, it's transmog basically, right. But you're buying a full outfit as opposed to piece by piece. So that was kind of the beginning of my experience. But once I actually got in and got playing and got used to how everything works, it was better. I forgot how much I loved the combat. The combat is like all skill shots. There's no like locking onto targets or whatever. There's, you know, big attacks that happen on the ground and, you know, ground effects showing you where that's going to happen, and you have the ability to actually dodge out of it. So it's, the combat is really, really fun. Not to mention, I love everything that they do with Elder Scrolls, where you can choose the armor you wear, choose the weapon you use, choose all of your skill trees. Like, you're not really penned in. You can play the way you want to play. Even though you start with a base class and you start with, there's like three specs in the class, you can then decide like, okay, I'm a sorcerer, but I get to decide if I want to do, you know, more destruction stuff, or if I want to be a healer, or, you know, and then maybe I want to switch partway through and start putting points into healing because my guild needs a healer. Mm-hmm. You don't have to start a whole new character. You don't have to, you know, you basically don't have to start from scratch. So I really like that. And it's the same. It's the same as Skyrim, right? Like, you could go and dump your skill points into whatever trees you wanted. Yeah. And it's the same sort of idea, right?
So it's based on usage. The more you did something, the more adept you became with it.
Right, right. And then so depending on how adept you become and how high you level up, then you have skill points you can put in different places, and, you know, and your skill with a certain thing becomes better. So cool. I love that part of Elder Scrolls as well. But the thing that I noticed was like there aren't levels necessarily of enemies. They just kind of, I guess, scale with you.
Okay.
Which is fine, except that a lot of the stuff I was playing was I'm very much still in my starting zone. So there are enemies that you come across, and basically I couldn't pull more than two or three like little dudes, which was fine. I'm a caster. I'm, you know, not big, heavy armored, so that makes sense. Although annoying for leveling, it's exactly the same in World of Warcraft. I hated leveling my mage because that was just a pain in the ass, because things came and hit me in the face and it hurt because I'm wearing cloth. I get it. But in Elder Scrolls, you go and you do a lot of like dungeon and cave diving and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's very much like Skyrim, where you can just come across caves and things. And the kind of end, I don't want to say boss, but the end creature, monster, whatever, is always much more powerful than everything else in the dungeon. And I found the only times that I was able to actually complete stuff is when another character randomly showed up. And that was a little bit frustrating, because I was just like, I would try a couple of times and I'd be able to get him maybe down to like half health. And then I would die. And then it reset you out at the beginning, and then I go all the way back in again, and then, you know, go up against the same boss again, get him to half health and die. And then someone else would show up, whether they were above my level or below my level. It didn't matter. It just seemed like it was encouraging cooperation and grouping, which is fine, unless you are like level 10 in an MMO that's been out for 2 years. Because there aren't those. And I didn't have this problem when I first played, because I was playing within the first month of launch. So there were tons and tons of people, to the point that it was almost hard to find something to kill because everyone else had already killed it. So, you know, like, you could go in and try to get one hit on these bosses and then leave. But now that the world, at least in the starting zone, is a little bit less populated, it becomes really difficult to actually defeat the enemies. So, I don't know. I found that a little bit frustrating, but the story is super cool still. The character, like, I love the character design. It's so high fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to spend a lot more time in this game, because I had a great time today outside of like those like little nits, I guess. But I'm really looking forward to getting into some max level stuff, because it seems like this Morrowind expansion has quite a lot of story to it. Like I said, I'm looking forward to going back to that area of the world. But yeah, I just feel like there's so much going on, and it's a really exciting game. And I think I'm getting really burnt out on WoW, because 7.2 didn't really deliver in a lot of ways story-wise. I mean, like, I'm sure you guys have seen on Twitter and stuff, like, basically the 7.2 questing on the Broken Isles that everyone was really excited about story-wise is like, every week Khadgar sends you on another little errand, and it's like, find 5 treasures, kill 20 demons. Like, it has absolutely zero story, and it's supposed to be like you're getting ready to invade the tomb, but there's literally nothing there. Like, I haven't done the quests in the last 4 weeks probably, because it's boring. So I'm getting really burnt out on that content. I'm waiting for the next thing, and then I jump into Morrowind and I'm just like, oh my god, there's so much story here. There's so much going on. I can hardly keep track of it all. Like, this is amazing. So Yeah. I don't know. It's I know. I don't think you ever tried it. Did you?
I played in the beta, and then you had picked it up at launch, and I didn't try it. And I think I tried it again when I went free to play. They had like a free week, and I was like, oh my gosh, what's happening? There's a lot going on here. And it's one of those things. And Josh in the chat room,
it is overwhelming.
Yeah, Josh was asking about the Old Republic, and I had tried that on our anniversary episode where we went back to the games we played in the first few weeks of the show, and it's just like it's like that game where you jump in and you haven't played in a while, and they've got this free to play update, and there's a bunch of different rules on how they deliver you content, and you could be like me and say like, I don't have time to sort this out. Like, there was zero barrier to entry to this game already because it's free to play. I haven't put any money into it, so me jumping out, it's totally good on me because I haven't spent any money. Now, mm-hmm. That being said, if you dig in and kind of like weed around the weeds basically and get in there and find the gameplay and find the story and stuff, I feel like there's a game there. There's a reason millions of people are playing this game. And I like the idea of an Elder Scrolls Online game. I like the idea of playing more Elder Scrolls and not having to wait however long it's going to take mm-hmm. Bethesda to make another one. But I don't know. It's not free to play. You have to buy it. But I think they had a free week, so there was a good chance to pick it up a while ago. I can't remember.
They you still have to buy the base game, but then you can play for free. Like I said, I pay for the monthly subscription, and that gives me a certain number of crowns every month. I think it's like 1,500 crowns every month, which is more in terms of crown value. Like, I think it's $10 for 750. So it's basically $20 worth of the in-game currency for the $15 a month subscription. Right. And then you also get access to the DLC. You also get, what else? There's a couple of other things, but
yeah, I was looking
basically
at
you unlock everything in the game.
Yeah.
And so there's no kind of barriers that you have to worry about.
But Morrowind's a paid upgrade.
Yes, Morrowind is an expansion. So it's the same as like Legion was to World of Warcraft. So you do have to pay for Morrowind the expansion, but same as Warcraft, like the Morrowind patch is in the game, so you can just go in and play it and you'll just get kind of prompted to buy the DLC or buy the expansion when you hit the area that you can't access, which is, like I said, end game content. Uh-oh. I don't actually know if it opened up more levels, but it has its own story. It's a whole new area, new raid, new PvP stuff. Like, it's an expansion. So,
and it
you
is,
can play through original Elder Scrolls and the original level cap and all that kind of stuff with the upgrades and things that they've done in the Morrowind expansion. Because when I logged in, so that was the other thing, when I logged in, I was a little bit overwhelmed because it had been so long, and like they had completely revamped like the inventory. They'd completely revamped like my skill set, my skill trees, and all of my spells and everything else, because I had to basically reapply all of my skill points and all of my levels and everything else. And I was kind of like, I don't even know what the things are that I should like have. So I just kind of went, okay, give me everything, go. Yeah. So. But yeah, like I said, I loved the combat, and that's one thing that hasn't really changed. And I love the kind of skill shot things. And I mean, like, my staff had this like life drain thing that technically locked on, but still, I like the ability to dodge most big attacks from enemies. Whereas like in something like WoW, most of the time they just kind of lock on and you lock on and then you just hit your buttons and you're done. Like, I know in raids there are mechanics that you can dodge and you need to and everything yeah. else, but this just felt a little bit more dynamic. So
yeah, that's one of my biggest issues with WoW. And I know I don't listen to many Warcraft podcasts because I just haven't played in a long time, but a lot of folks, when they talk about WoW, they're even starting to get to the point where they're finally like, you know, you can only click 1, 2, 3, 4, repeat so often until you need a break. And not that's not to say Warcraft doesn't display good gameplay, good story, good good updates. But at a certain point, you want a little something different. And that's what my biggest issue with MMOs is that I can only do that for so long before I want something a little more action-based.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I get sick and tired of click buttons. So the fact that Morrowind or ESO in general is an action-based dynamic combat system is really cool. And I think we've gotten far enough along with networks that we can do an MMO with dynamic content or dynamic combat. So it's good that it that works then. You feel like the dynamic combat still reigns supreme in this game?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and it makes me look forward to PvP, because I PvP'd a lot in WoW this past weekend, because that's kind of my go-to once I get bored of the main story. So it happened a lot later in Legion than it did in Warlords of Draenor, but I did a lot of PvP this past weekend, and just the ability to just lock on to somebody and like do your abilities and stuff, it's just, it doesn't feel as fun. It's the reason why I like Smite so much, is because everything that you do in that game is a skill shot. Like, you have to position your character properly, and you have to use your abilities at the right time, and it can make or break your experience. And it's the same in Elder Scrolls. So I'm looking forward to getting max level and to trying out PvP, because I feel like that is kind of going to be like the experience, you know, like, does the combat work when it's not an NPC?
Yeah. No, I think that'll be a good thing to report back on. And so you...
And technically when I hit level 10, because I think I was almost at level 10, I hit level 10 almost instantly when I logged in. So I technically unlocked PvP, but I don't know. I'm going to have to look into it a little bit more, because if it's the same sort of thing like Warcraft, where there's people who can turn off their XP, their twinks, and they get the absolute best gear available to them, and then they just never leave like the top end of the bracket, right? So if the bracket is 10 to 19, they have a level 19 character with all the best possible gear, and that's the level that they play at. And if it's a similar situation in Elder Scrolls, then I'm not that keen on it. I'd rather wait until I hit max level to try it out, because I don't want to have a starting experience in PvP in an MMO that involves players like that. Just because, like, they're going to be up here and I'm going to be down here and they're just going to farm me, and that's not fun. So,
yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess my one other question that pops into my head when it comes to this game is that I had it and then I lost it. It was important too. It was all about ESO, and it was how this grand question. And then I was distracted by my dog trying to get out, and also the fact that I don't know what the question was about, but I'm sure it was important and had everything to do with the fact that that Morrowind. So you haven't touched Morrowind yet. You've purchased it, but you're not there. Oh, now I remember. Level boost. Is there a level boost? Do they give you an option to kind of jump straight to the Morrowind content at all?
They do not, but they gave me 2 experience scrolls, which I actually thought there were going to be more of. You can buy experience scrolls in the store for crowns, so you can real money kind of boost your character that way.
Right.
And it gives you plus 50% experience, so it gives you a little bit of an experience boost for 2 hours.
Oh, that's not bad.
So I did use one today, and I think I went from I'm going to call it level 10 because I was level 9, but basically level 10, to, I think, 13 in the time that I used the experience scroll. So, I mean, worth.
Yeah.
and I mean, like, I was still trying to figure things out and everything else. So I definitely wasn't, like, power leveling through or anything, but there's also, so I mentioned very early on how there are add-ons. I haven't really gone too deep into that world, but you basically do ESO add-ons the exact same way that you do WoW add-ons. If you guys used to use the Curse app, now it's the Twitch app. There's just basically a section for ESO the same way there's a section for Warcraft. So you just have to, you know, designate what your add-on folder is for ESO, and then it's super, super easy to use. So I need to look into that a little bit more, because I think UI is where Elder Scrolls Online is falling flat for me, just because it's just really difficult to use. And because it's like action-based dynamic kind of combat, you need the mouse to, it's your crosshairs, right?
Yeah.
So you can't use the mouse to just like go and like click on stuff. So you have to like use the period key to go into cursor mode, which is like, it's if when you're like walking with WASD and then
oh, that's terrible.
Your hand on the mouse, like it just, it, yeah, it's really awkward. So I haven't played with the key bindings either. I was trying just everything Elder Scrolls default. And yeah, there's some really like awkward key bindings and awkward things. Like to mount, I kept pressing Z because I was trying to mount. And that's like, you like pull your weapon out is the Z key. And so you actually have to press H for horse, I guess, to mount up. So again, it's like way, it's like three keys over from where my hand is naturally resting to do movement. So there's just some awkward key bindings in the kind of normal setup. So I need to play around with it more, but the game itself is awesome and it still is awesome. And I'm glad that now I am kind of in a place where I have a few weeks before Tomb of Sargeras actually launches. So I have some time in my schedule for a different MMO. So I think I'm going to spend a lot more time in ESO and then in the coming weeks.
Well, I know there's one thing we won't do with this episode, and it will be called, it will not be named ESO and some variation of sucks. I think one the last time we talked about ESO was when it launched, and we probably talked about it here and there in between, but when it launched, we called the episode ESO Doesn't Suck, and everybody who Googled ESO Sucks got our video.
Found our episode and gave us crap for saying it was good. Yeah,
it was back in the day when SEO was not our strong suit. And that one is
I think the episode title was actually Mute ESO Sucks, comma, Have Fun, or something like that. But yeah,
we tried.
ESO Sucks was a phrase that was in our title, and it was not well received.
No,
they thought it was quite false advertising. Oh, that's being nice.
Yeah, a lot of folks who want to like. There's something about when new MMOs come out, they are instantly a failure just because they're not World of Warcraft. I mean, Blizzard would be the only person that could come out and create an MMO and have it not be World of Warcraft, and people would give it a chance. Because it was made by the people who made World of Warcraft, and even Blizzard couldn't do it in a way. So I think that I feel that this MMO ESO, I love how these MMOs are continuing to exist because they're a type of genre that a lot of people love. And like, let's face it, World of Warcraft, they keep slapping on some new color and some new polish, but it's still a 10-year-old game. And it's nice to have new tech every once in a while, and if we shit all over all the new entries, then you're going to be stuck with what World of Warcraft is, by all means, it is an older engine game, and ESO is a brand new experience, and you know, same thing happened to WildStar. WildStar wasn't quite able to pull up, but it seems like ESO has sort of, you know, evened out well with their free-to-play transition, similar to Star Wars. So it's nice to see that they're continuing to exist, adding expansions. I know a lot of people are excited about Morrowind, so
I'm excited about Morrowind. I'm glad that they're putting expansions into ESO, and I'm glad that it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. But man, the one thing playing ESO today that I was like, this makes me want so bad is just that single-player Elder Scrolls experience. Like, it's just, I just miss it so much. Skyrim was amazing, and Elder Scrolls is like, it's okay, but I just wish that we had the next Elder Scrolls single player experience. But, you know, maybe it'll come eventually. I don't know. We'll see.
They're working their way towards it. I mean, Bethesda has been out there saying, actually, Bethesda will have an E3 presentation at some point. I think it's on Sunday. And they'll probably head towards Elder Scrolls 6 at some point in the next few years. I would imagine we get an announcement probably in the next couple of years. They're due up. So
yeah, cross your fingers. All right, so we wanted to thank our new patron this week, Soldier Hawk. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you'd like to do so, you can go to patreon.com/thegamersin, and you can support us at the $7 a week episode in order to get an ad on the show. This week we have a patron ad from The Geek Review. It says, The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything. For an honest consumer review, The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, at the geekreview.podbean.com, which brings us to our news this week. We're doing pre-E3 odds and ends because, as Ryan mentioned off the top of the show, there is a lot of stuff going on this week. There's a lot of stuff that happened, a lot of stuff that was announced, including we had a Destiny 2, I guess, like, press conference kind of reveal thing, which included the fact that it's going to be on the Blizzard launcher, which is, you know, kind of interesting news.
You know, it's exciting. I've heard a lot of folks say, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and a lot of those podcasts are in the Frog Pants community and AMOVE community, and a lot of those podcast hosts really like Blizzard games, and the fact that this is on the Blizzard launcher has kind of got them saying, yeah, I might play Destiny. That sounds like a lot of fun. I can buy it with WoW Gold. That's great.
Yeah, which just shows how amazing that marketing decision was, eh?
It makes sense to me. And honestly, if Activision has a distribution system sitting within their publishing group, and there's no pre-existing expectation for Destiny to be on Steam or Origin or whatever, why not make the jump? They couldn't do this with Call of Duty, because there's this built-in expectation that it'll be available on Steam, it'll be available on Windows, and the fact that Destiny, this is the first Destiny, will be on PC, by the way, for you PC Master Race folks, that's it's the only place you'll be able to play it in 4K and 60 frames a second if you have a $5,000 screaming beast. So look forward to that. If you want to spend $5,000, I'm sure it would not cost you $5,000, but I think that to be able
to
play,
you would have to have a pretty amazing computer to play Destiny 2 on 4K. Yeah.
4K, 60 frames per second. I know people have those beasts in their possession. They'll be able to play that and they'll be excited. I don't know. I think it's exciting that it's coming to PC. I know folks who aren't Blizzard fanboys are still excited to know that this is coming to PC. It just makes sense for it to be on the Blizzard launcher. And it's kind of surprising, with the mess that was Destiny and the way that content was received, for Blizzard to just kind of be like, yeah, we welcome Destiny 2 to our launcher as one of the only games that we will offer third party. It's just smacks of Bobby Kotick told me so. Like, kind of, it's just really out of character for Blizzard, I think. 'Cause Destiny 2, I don't know about you, but Destiny 2 doesn't really come across as something that's, I don't know, like, this major revelation of video games. It looks like Destiny to me, which is not a bad thing. Like, it's
not a huge knock. There's a lot of people that really enjoy Destiny.
Destiny, you know. But I feel like, you know, I know it's all PR speak, but it just sounds, I mean, let's call it what it is. It's a publishing deal. It's nothing unique. Like, it's the right scenario and the right time for there to be a game that Activision is publishing that can then be on their launcher. Like, the Blizzard launcher is as much, you know, Activision's.
Which is, it's actually funny because they rebranded as the Blizzard launcher from Battle.net. And I feel like Battle.net actually makes more sense if you're going to bring in games that aren't made by Blizzard.
Yeah.
It seems like a weird timing of a rebrand. Like, anyways. That's the thing. I mean, they're separate companies, because a lot of people have been talking about potential cross promotions and everything else. And the thing is, they're still separate. Like, they're under the same, like, big, huge corporate umbrella, but there's no, like, tie-ins between, like, say, Overwatch and Destiny, or, you know, Heroes and Destiny. This doesn't mean we're going to get Destiny characters in Heroes of the Storm. This just means they're using the existing distribution system that they have. Like, why build a whole new one when you already have a real money currency exchange going on with the WoW tokens, and when you already have a download, and launcher system? Like, you have it, it's working, take advantage, move on.
and Destiny 2, we knew it was going to be a thing, and I think it's exciting that they're launching on PC. A lot of folks want that. I think it's also exciting that we're getting the tone and the story that people came to expect from The Taken King, and that we're sorely misled with the other expansion that came out, the Red Iron something, or Rise of Iron. But I'm excited because the trailer showed to me that they're developing the sequel to Taken King that we wanted in Rise of Iron. Like, Rise of Iron probably, I know it's a live game, so they needed content, but I feel like Rise of Iron was one of those, like, I really should have waited for the reviews, because $40 for that expansion was just not worth it for me, who's not a PvP player or B, an MMO or a raid player. I'm more of like a PvE guy, a little bit of PvP, but Destiny 2
mostly a quester.
Yeah, mostly. Just, you know, get into quest, and then, like, after all that's done, I'll, like, dabble, I'll scratch the surface, and then I'll move on to something else. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm just, I'm excited to see where the story's going, because it feels like it's finally starting to continue the story they're telling, as opposed to just saying, no, we're not gonna continue this story, we're gonna tell a whole new story for some ungodly reason. Like, it's just poor storytelling, and this is the first instance we're getting of a continuation, which is good. It seems to be what they hinted at the end of Taken King, with a distress beacon from the Cabal homeworld. And now in Destiny 2, we're getting invaded by the Cabal homeworld. We don't really know what is going on, but the Cabal race are invading Earth. They've destroyed the last city, and you're trying to escape with your life to take back the remnants of the last city, which is exciting. You know, it's a and it's a perfect reason to kill off Bill Nighy, because he was expensive.
but he has such a good voice.
I know, but he's expensive. Like, you know, they patched out Tyrion.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage. I forgot his name because Game of Thrones has been gone for far too long. And they patched him out, but Bill Nighy's like the speaker. He's just a dude who talks to the circle planet in the sky. And I'm not making any of this up. I'm just, you know, I'm just not using the words that Bungie would like me to use. But I think there's a throwaway line of like, where's the speaker? I don't know. I'll go find him. Oh, he's missing. It's like, perfect. We don't have to pay Bill Nighy. This is amazing. he can go do Love Actually 2 or something. But
oh, don't tease me, Ryan.
I think there's like a weird Red Nose trailer coming out where short film.
But it's like it's a short. It's not actually a sequel. Contrary to what the clickbaity titles would have you think. Anyways, we also heard about Far Cry 4, or 5. Oof. That puts you in Montana facing off against Christian extremists.
Yeah, so this is fun. Doesn't sound good?
Yeah, a little bit on the nose, I think.
Exactly what the world needs. Exploring America's South? That's where Montana is, right?
I think, isn't it one of the ones in the middle? I don't know. I'm going to have to Google it.
Canadian show? I don't know. I think Montana's somewhere, you know, close enough. There's.
It's like, do you mean Montana's, the restaurant? No, I don't.
But
okay, it's like in the middle. It's right underneath Alberta and Saskatchewan. It's like in the middle, but then like up at the border in the north.
Now Josh is saying Montana borders Canada. So maybe we have something to worry about. So it looks like Far Cry 5 will center around American antagonists, where this it's a Christian cult where they have a bunch of guns, and they tie people up and write sinner on their back.
This is what Ryan has gathered from the one promo image.
This is all we have. This is all we have to go on, Jocelyn. There's a wolf with a red cross on its face. That's animal cruelty. I don't know. The chat room's having fun with this. I feel like this is an interesting take, and I think that Ubisoft has been getting a lot of heat with their Far Cry and their Ghost Recon franchise of attacking, I shouldn't say that. That's what the media is trying to do. But I think that Ubisoft has had enough with people and countries getting upset with them for setting their, you know, their games in war-torn countries that appear to be similar to countries in the real world. And I think Ghost Recon was Bolivia, and the government of Bolivia kind of like just said, this game is terrible, you should not buy it because it puts us in a bad light. So the fact that they're moving over to America, I think like America is really good at, you know, parodying themselves, so maybe we'll be okay with this, except for maybe like really staunch Christians that probably won't like this.
Gee, you think?
I do think, and I know, and I'm surprised I haven't seen more about Outlast 2, because Outlast 2 is like a far worse thing of this.
Yeah, that was what my question was going to be, because this is kind of the second big title that we've talked about in the same number of months where, you know, Christian extremists, these seem to be a little bit more on the, you know, gun-toting side than maybe the Outlast ones were. They were much more of like a down-home culty kind of deep woods Christian.
If yeah, like
I'm trying
and
really
stakes.
Hard not to be offensive, but I'm just thinking of like movie tropes, basically, yeah. is what I'm trying to explain here. And so I think they're kind of different here. But do you think there's going to be a lot of kind of backlash against this? And, you know, is it fair to have backlash against this, but not against, you know, like South Pacific and, you know, Bolivian countries, stuff like that? Like, is it fair that people maybe didn't care so much about that, but might care about killing other Americans? Like,
the hardcore Christian cult stuff, like, that's a thing that exists in the real world. Maybe not specifically in Montana or Hope County, as this game is calling their location. Such a fake postcard name. It's one of those things where they've based it on a reality and then stretched it. Far Cry is this series, except for the first and maybe the second one, where they've taken a concept of a location and then just, you know, sprinkled a little like crazy on it and then stretched it out, stretched the fantasy.
It's a very kind of like big kind of caricature yeah. of like whatever their subject matter tends to be. It's kind of what the franchise is known for. They take something rooted in reality and just make it go like big and exaggerated. So I mean, I'm not saying that this is going to be in any way, shape, or form an actual like picture of reality, but I mean, it's one of those things where it's going to hit a lot of people close to home, and I wonder if they're going to take a lot of crap for that.
I think they definitely will take crap for it, and I think that for folks who video games have come a long way, and they've sort of gathered this respect where people won't jump right to the wrong conclusions. Like I remember when Mass Effect originally came out, there was some blue alien butt. And the news was covering this and getting all up in arms about this, you know, sex simulator with aliens. And they they never played the game. And it was just kind of like, you guys should play the game. It's like 30-second scene. You see a little bit of butt. And it takes 60 hours to get there. Like, it's an investment. Almost like that was in defense.
You invest in the butt.
Yeah, you had to invest in the butt. And nowadays, but I feel like this is kind of like the promo image is all we have to go on and a little trailer. But it gives you enough to kind of reach conclusions of like, oh man, this, you know, it wouldn't matter which religion or what location or whatever. It's still clearly being made to kind of cause you to ask questions, to think, ooh, like this could probably really happen. And you know, I think what Real World News, was it last year, that group of they didn't call them extremists, but that group of people who like took over like a government building with guns and stuff. I'm trying to remember. It was in the States. It was talked a lot about. I can't remember what it was about, but it was like a land claim or something. Is that making any sense?
No? I think so.
Yeah. There was an instance where, you know, they weren't necessarily Christian extremists, but, you know, they probably, I think they dabbled. So
I
don't know. It was Oregon. Thank you.
How do you dabble in extremism? Isn't that kind of anyway?
You know how you dabble by having guns and taking over a government building and saying we're not leaving until you lower our taxes. I think is exactly.
I was going to
say
I don't think that's Christian extremism. I think that's just rebels.
Well, in this instance, there just happens to be some. You know, they don't outright religion say Christian. There just seems to be some religious, you know, images like crosses and stuff. And the thing is, like, I think that this is just like South Park. You know, Ubisoft is looking at this franchise and saying, like, no place is safe. America isn't safe. Christianity isn't safe. Even though a majority of their users may end up being in those in that country of that religion. And I know when you kind of go against the grain of your audience, that sometimes alienates and causes issues. Like when South Park did like a Christianity episode, I'm sure that caused news, you know, like Scientology, stuff like that. Like Ubisoft is just proving that no place is safe in terms of the parodying and the sort of lampooning that they're doing. So I think this is good.
I kind of fall under that umbrella too of thinking that this is probably actually a good thing, because it's kind of nice that nothing is safe. It makes more sense to me that if you can make fun of and or kill one type of human, why can't you make fun of and or kill another type of human in a video game? Because they are commentary, they are art, and if one thing is off limits, then everything should be off limits, and if one thing can be talked about, then everything should be able to be talked about. So I'm kind of on board.
Yeah. Good.
The thing I'm not so on board with, though.
Really? This is the best.
So...
I'm going to put it in the show. I'm just going to put it in the chat so people can know what we're struggling with.
So Mario and Rabbids are colliding in a new Switch game.
Yeah, it's happening. This has been rumored actually for about a year. There's been leaks here and there. They'll just
shove Mario into anything and try to sell it to us at this point.
These days, isn't that weird? Like, Mario used to be sacred, and this to me appears to be the turning point. You know, I came to accept the fact that every 2 years we were going to get a Mario and Sonic at the Olympics game. I'm fine with that. I've come to peace with the fact that Mario will race alongside Sonic and somehow win. Maybe he didn't. I don't know what happened there. Maybe Mario didn't pass the drug test, or Sonic did pass the drug. I don't know what happened. But anyways, with this game, it looks like we're getting... We only have a leaked concept art. This hasn't been officially launched, but it depicts, you know, the basic four: Mario, Luigi, Yoshi, and Peach with laser guns. And then And then you have your Rabbids all dressed up as those characters, including a selfie taking Peach. Which, have you ever played the Rabbid games at all?
I have not. I did not know this was a thing until I saw the rabbit dressed as Peach taking a selfie. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was going to censor myself just right there. And I was like, no, you know what? This needs to be said.
That's your one. That's the show's one. Yeah. I think it's interesting that Nintendo... this is actually shows some real, and you're going to think this is weird, but this shows that Nintendo's willing to open up their characters to other developers. But I feel like this is the instance where they've gone too far. Ubisoft probably could have maybe, you know, done a softball with having the Mario license. They didn't need to go like all out. I'm a little concerned that this is probably a party game of some kind and not
an RPG. It kind of looks like it might be, because it's called, according to the leaked image, it's called Kingdom Battle, right? So it kind of looks like it's going to be some sort of a brawler. And I'm kind of getting sick of that. Like shooter brawler kind of something. I don't know. It's basically like, it just seems to me they're just taking a bunch of characters that exist in other universes, throwing them all in one place and saying, ta-da! New game. Spend your money because it's got Mario on it.
Yeah. Well,
like, no.
It's a Switch title. It's supposed to come out in August. There's rumors it'll be out as soon as August, and there's not a lot of stuff coming out for the Switch, so we might be shit out of luck and just have to pick this one up if we're looking for things to keep busy on the Switch. Honestly, if it is a battler or a mini game collection, I might be less inclined to pick it up. But there is talk that it is actually an RPG. So if it's more like the Mario and Luigi series or Paper Mario, this suddenly becomes interesting.
Yeah, I did really like Paper Mario, so. Mm-hmm. I would be down for something like that, but I mean, we're still going to have to see, because again, this is a leak, so we don't actually know.
We just know it's ridiculous.
It is really ridiculous. It is, there's laser guns, and I don't know.
Like, the Peach selfie thing aside, if you remove that from the image and try to find something else that shocks you, the thing that shocks me the most is Mario with a Mega Man blaster. Isn't that the weird, like, you just never would have thought to see Mario with a gun. That's essentially a gun, right? Like,
yeah, it's a weird place to take Mario.
Yeah, I need to see it, and I'm sure I can't wait to see the trailer, honestly, because Ubisoft and their Rabbids franchise, they make some pretty, not hysterical is the right word, but just like quirky, crazy, downright stupid trailers. That trailer is going to be probably fantastic. If there's anything that comes out of Ubisoft this summer at E3, it's going to be an amazing trailer. from this game.
Very true. Mm-hmm. Something we're likely not to see too much of at E3, unless it's just more and more teases, is Red Dead Redemption 2, because it has been officially delayed until spring of 2018, and everyone has a sad.
We waited, 10 years? Yeah. I can wait another 6 months. And honestly, I have a feeling that this fall is going to be busy with titles, so there's always room in the spring. I'm always happy to have a really great game come out in the spring. So
that's true. I feel like spring 2017 was actually crazier and busier than the holiday season last year. Like, there was so much stuff that came out in March, April. I was just I didn't have enough time to actually play a freaking game, because it was just it was Horizon, and then it was Zelda, and then it was oh, crap. I can't even remember all the stuff because there were so many things. What's the one I missed entirely, basically?
You've got Mass Effect.
Mass Effect,
You have Prey came out early May. You have, you mentioned, Horizon. Nier came out in early March, which was a well-received RPG.
Obviously the Hearthstone expansion.
Yep.
And the whole rotation of the standard year and everything. Like, I just feel like I've been so consumed with gaming. I know, boohoo, poor me. But I've been just so consumed, and there's so much to do that I'm just I can't. How do I manage my time between all these different titles? And it seems harder this spring than it's ever been before. So I feel like maybe spring is the new holiday season, I wonder if that has anything to do with the decision to push Red Dead Redemption to next year and just see how it does with the spring launch. Cause there were some pretty huge ones this year.
Yeah, no. I think a lot of fall games actually got delayed into the spring, similar to what is happening again. And I mean, games are big products, and when a big product needs time to, another one was Zelda. The Switch, for that matter, it was a busy spring, and I think you're going to see the same thing happen. If there's one thing that doesn't happen this year, it'll be Switch titles that actually come out in the fall, as opposed to, delaying to winter, hopefully. But it's a trend, the games are huge. They're very hard to predict. And when you need extra time on a game, they're so big that usually when you need extra time, the 6 months is that sweet spot where you're actually going to add polish to the game.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about it many, many times before, but I am definitely in the camp of, I would like to see them delay a game 6 months, 8 months, even a year, if it means that the game in the end is going to be much, much more polished.
Yeah, no, for sure. I completely agree. And that's important. I think there's a classic quote from Miyamoto that you've probably heard a billion times, and it's just it's what describes this scenario every time. A delayed game is good forever. A rushed game is bad forever. And if Red Dead Redemption 2 came out and it was bad, even if it was more than just the normal Rockstar jank, people would be very upset.
Very, very true. Yeah, they have waited a long time. So waiting a little bit longer is not necessarily a bad thing. So we have one more patron ad for this episode. Ryan, take it away.
Yes, this one comes from Simon. Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two Knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com.
That's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, and Embrace the Spoilers. I'm going to take a second here to pimp the Embrace the Spoilers Kickstarter. Game of Thrones Season 7 is starting up in July, and we are looking to fund a new season of Embrace the Spoilers. So I don't actually have the link here because I'm a terrible podcaster, but if you go to Kickstarter and search for Embrace the Spoilers, you will find the campaign. So if you enjoy Garrett and I talking all things TV, go and check that out. There are also some really cool stretch goals, including making me watch movies that I've never seen before that Garrett thinks are just a total travesty. So if you want to make me watch Indiana Jones and record an audio commentary for that, then head on over to Embrace the Spoilers Kickstarters and help us out there.
This is not going to be one of those things where you say, I haven't seen Star Wars and everyone erupts, but Indiana Jones is one of the... Everyone's seen Indiana. You've never seen Indiana Jones?
I have never seen Indiana Jones. The only one... Okay, so I've seen Crystal Skull.
Oh, you've seen the worst.
Which is what everyone says. And I've seen half of, I think, Temple of Doom, maybe, the one with the blonde chick. I turned it off halfway through because I couldn't stand her.
You've seen what is then described as the second worst by most people.
Yes, which is also what Garrett said. So there are quite a lot of things through the 80s and 90s that somehow slipped through my pop culture filter and I did not see. So one of the things that we're doing for a stretch goal is basically starting the process of getting me caught up on, you know, 30 years ago.
Well, yeah, because they're making a new one. So you've seen Crystal Skull. You know what you could do is you could just... Yeah, there are two movies in that franchise that need to be watched by everyone because they're just they're fun popcorn films. So let's get that done, folks. Let's wrap that one up.
So I think Ryan put a link in the chat room. But again, yes, if you just search for Embrace the Spoilers on Kickstarter, you will find the campaign. Thank you guys all for your support. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JustPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amovetv. You can also email the show and let us know what you're playing at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.